Welcome to the B2B Sales and Marketing Hotline.
Dialing up the latest tactics and hottest trends, we're here to help you take your B2B game from stagnant to stellar.
I'm Emily.
And I'm Marianne. And together, we're ready to answer your burning B2B sales and marketing questions.
Each episode, we'll tackle a need-to-know topic in the ever-evolving world of B2B sales and marketing. We'll break it down with actionable takeaways you can implement right away.
And because you don't get results without real talk, we're wrapping up every show with a quick Q&A segment. So fire away with your burning questions.
Whether you're a seasoned sales leader or a marketing veteran, the B2B Sales and Marketing Hotline is your one-stop shop to take your B2B efforts to the next level.
Hi, Emily.
Hello.
So glad for another episode. Today we're going to be diving into how to build winning sales playbooks. I really love the winning in here. So it's not just about sales playbooks. It's about effective ones.
Yes.
Ready to start the convo?
Yes. Yeah. I think this is so timely. I feel like sales plays and sales playbooks have really taken off in the last like 5 to 10 years. Pretty much every company has some sort of a sales playbook. It just might not be like formalized. So I'm excited to talk through this and yeah, how people can like kind of get that on paper and formalize this.
Yes. And so just for any listeners out there who don't, you know, really know who we are, we, our parent company, the Center for Sales Strategy, has been around for 40 plus years and been building sales playbooks all of those years,
yeah,
or coaching around them at least for quite a while. And then since our division, LeadG2, started, we have also been a part of that. So we work alongside CSS and we work with clients individually to help them build sales playbooks and really formalize the process of both onboarding new salespeople and teaching processes to current salespeople in a standardized place, right? All in one place to go to for questions. Again, we really, our tactic is to build them for new salespeople. So it's all of your questions are answered in one place, but we train all salespeople on using these. I mean, mm-hmm. It's really a gift to anyone who's in sales for their company to have a sales playbook.
Yeah. So like, think about a sales playbook almost like, like a true like playbook, like a sports team, would reference a play or, you know, go back into the playbook and see what the next step would be. It's really similar to how, you know, we build and how we recommend building sales playbooks in the sense that, the idea is that your seller, or anyone at your company, but primarily sellers, have a next step, right? So, whatever it is, whatever they're trying to reference, whatever the play is going to be, they're able to look up and see within that playbook, the overarching, overview of the company, the mission, the goals, the employees, who to go to for what, and then also have those individual plays where they can see a specific scenario and how they should handle that scenario.
Right. Yep. Specific objections, specific what to do when you get a form filled out on your website, just able to deep dive and know how to take the very next step.
Yeah. And if you are a HubSpot customer and you currently have HubSpot in the HubSpot platform, you can also build out sales plays too. So, you know, you could formalize a sales playbook in a PDF file or a PowerPoint or wherever, or, you know, you could actually build out some of these sales plays directly within HubSpot with templates ready to go, making sure that sellers, you know, can easily access it within their CRM, which I personally really like that functionality.
Yes, absolutely. And it's really continued to just really get better and better. That's definitely something that's caught on and become more popular. And HubSpot has put more effort into making that a really user-friendly experience.
Yes, for sure. So Marianne, what would you say to people listening if they, you know, want to create their own sales playbook, they're ready, they want to kind of formalize and document some of these? What do you think are some of the, you know, winning components of a sales playbook that someone would need to think about?
So it's going to be different for every industry, right? I mean, every industry, every company is going to be different. But I would say overarching, making sure that you have your sales process documented, mm-hmm. And mapping out that sales journey is really important. I would say your target persona or your buyer persona, and understand who you're selling to is a really important chapter. You want your salespeople to be able to reference exactly who they're talking to and understand who that buyer persona is. Maybe a section about valid business reasons and what your value proposition is and how to craft that message, and different examples of how to create that value while talking to that salesperson, right? So kind of building on the target persona chapter and the sales process chapter and the buyer's journey chapter, and then going into, okay, well, now how do I create my messaging around both of those
things? I would add too, one of my favorite things that we do with sales playbooks is like providing battle cards as a chapter. Specifically getting competitor information and then lining up where you and your competitor are alike and different. It allows, I think, salespeople to have really easy reference points to objection handling and also just speaking intelligently about their customer or their competitors and what they can and can't do.
Love that. Yes. I would also say, just sales metrics, like how a salesperson can measure their performance metrics for them. Whether that be specific goals for your sales team as a whole or activity goals of knowing how many calls you need to be making, how many appointments you need to be having, how many proposals you need to be presenting per week, to be successful. So just a KPIs for sales performance.
Yep. And then I'll say one last one too, which would be like the tools and technology that you're required to use as a sales team. Like, you know, maybe information on the CRM you use, or if you have like Seamless AI or a Zoom Info or any of those, and how you find that information. I mean, I would just lay out very specifically the tech stack that your company uses and what specifically a salesperson might want to use. Cause, you know, first day on a job or referencing back what's available to them, that would be a good like source of truth.
Absolutely agree. You know, as a sales manager, you're going to have that new salesperson coming to you and asking questions about how to use that over and over again. And if you have it documented in a sales playbook, they can easily look back at that to reference.
Right. And you could even have like the specific tool and then what you would use that tool for. So you could have, you know, Zoom Info, prospecting and pulling lists, HubSpot, CRM, you know, relationship manager and sales sequences, or you could have very like specific steps for people to use and when to use them.
Right. Right. We kind of already talked about customizing the playbook for different sales roles. But maybe we could dive a little more into, I know we said new hires versus experienced reps, but you can really customize a playbook for lots of different sales roles. We've worked with, I'm thinking of one specific client who had, salespeople that sold different things. So there were some things that overlapped, a lot of chapters overlapped, but also who their target persona was. And really their sales process was different for different, you know, not everybody was responsible for selling the same things. And so making sure that you can kind of differentiate account managers versus new business sales versus, you know, really tailoring content to breaking out specific sales roles.
Yes. No, I think that's a really fair point, specifically around selling different things. I mean, so many organizations I can think of, their salespeople are required or have budgets for specific things, but then they can also sell other things if they'd like. Or, you know, maybe you have a national rep and then some like more local reps or whatever the case is. You could have different chapters for those specific people so they can reference, you know, specifically to them. And then if they get a promotion or move into a different role, they would be able to reference back and see, okay, now my new role, here's how it differs from my old role, and have like really clear laid out expectations for themselves.
Yeah, I love it. It's so true.
And then as far as best practices for actually, like, you know, you build this playbook and it's all done, it's pretty and you're ready to go, but how do you actually go about, you know, getting people to use it, adopting it? And I think that this is, you know, generally a theme throughout our entire podcast is, you know, it's not if you build it, they will come. That's not how things work with in, you know, getting salespeople and marketing leaders and everyone to actually do what they're paying for.
And let's just like pause and soak that in, because that is such a beautiful expectation to set. It really is. It's crucial to understand that building the playbook is not the end of things. Just like building the CRM and setting it up the way you want is not the end of the road.
100%. No.
Making sure you're putting the information in, making sure that you're creating a long-term plan of how the sales team is actually going to use the playbook and how you as the marketing or the sales team or both, the owner of the playbook, is going to update it and revisit it.
Yeah, because there's nothing worse than being a seller and going to look at the playbook like you were told to do and opening up the playbook and it's out of date. And then you have no idea where to go or who to trust because you were told to reference a playbook that you can see is clearly out of date. So, and then it's hard to buy back that enthusiasm that they once had. So
and that trust that optimized. Like, and the trust that the information is going to be there, but this doesn't have to be a huge job. It's an important part, but it's a small part time commitment wise. You could set a reminder to quarterly spend an hour checking it and updating it. This is the bulk of the effort really goes in at the beginning of getting it created and then getting salespeople trained. And then it's just there to use. You just don't want it to go sit somewhere to rust and die.
Right. Yeah. And that's why, you know, if you are using, you know, HubSpot or any of those, try incorporating some of the plays. So within a sales playbook, we also recommend having sales plays. So, you know, your sales playbook might be like largely around company expectations, goals, about us, who works where, maybe an org chart, things like that. But then when you really get into the meat of the sales playbook, it's those plays, which are, you know, intended for, you know, a specific scenario. A customer decides that they don't want to renew with you. Here's the play you would follow. Or, a deal went to close lost. Here's the play you would follow.
Right.
Like having specific plays and moving that type of stuff into HubSpot or into the CRM you're using or into any of, you know, the easier processes online will help sales actually use it. Because I think sales will reference a play when it pops into their brain to reference a play, but it's not as like at their fingertips unless it's like within their platform, right? Like they can easily move a deal to close lost and then open up that play. Yes. So it's like that connecting the dots for them within the CRM.
Yep. And then I feel like the last thing I would add to this section is just, this is not, sales playbooks are not one size fits all. You can't just Google or go to ChatGPT and say, create a sales playbook for my company. This is who we are. I think that the thing that makes sales playbooks, particularly helpful is that they're so custom to who you are, who your salespeople are, who your target audience is, where your standstills are in your sales pipeline and your sales process and addressing those things. So this is something that should be very custom. This is not something that someone on your marketing team should like whip up on the side in a week. This is something that needs a lot of involvement from your sales director and leaders, as well as your salespeople, to understand where the blind sides are and to create some process to solve for those. So don't try to make this one size fits all. Don't try to borrow somebody else's sales playbook. I think spending intentional time to create something that's going to work for your organization is important.
Yeah. And I love that point, you know, really making it custom, really making it fit your organization, and then building that into your habits. So like, a salesperson comes up to you and says, hey, you know, I'm running into this. Who should I contact? And you say, did you reference the sales playbook? Like having that be the kind of go-to place that will help sellers to use it, right? Like if they're constantly being told to reference it, they're going to have it saved on their desktop. Like they're going to look at it.
And it helps create consistency, right? If everybody knows the sales playbook has what to do when you've presented a proposal and the prospect goes silent, well, if all your salespeople are following the same process, that creates consistency. So you have better results. Mm-hmm. So making sure that even a tenured older salespeople are using the same processes and understand that is.
Yeah. And when it comes to making a sales playbook, like if you wanted to go make your own sales playbook, I mean, a really good place to start with that would be to go ahead and start talking to the sales leaders, the sellers, like maybe your best sellers, asking them how they handle situations, like really kind of getting a census of who's doing what and what's working, and then use that to kind of form your best practices playbook.
Absolutely. Great conversation. I love talking about sales playbooks, and maybe we can put some extra documentation on some of this in our show notes, because we have some great.
Yeah, we have like a sample sales play you can download. We have a couple of different things on sales playbooks, so we can attach for sure.
Okay.
Okay, should questions. You ready?
Let's do it.
Okay, first question. How can we better qualify inbound leads so our sales team isn't wasting time on unqualified prospects?
Lead qualification process. So important. Have a lead qualifier. Who is responsible for qualifying leads? It should be somebody who has a process, knows what to do. 1, 2, 3. Check out their website for their email domain, where they work. Look at their LinkedIn to see what their job title is. Are they a decision maker? You know, X, Y, Z. You have to create what those things are, but there should be a lead qualifier that gets all the leads and has a process of qualifying or not qualifying, because there is nothing more frustrating than a salesperson getting just dumped random, any single person who fills out a form on the website who is not a lead necessarily.
Yeah. I think it can make them lose trust in the leads too. So they're less like urgently following up with leads. So you want to make sure that leads that get handed to sales are as good as they possibly can be, so that sales is excited about getting a new lead. I would add to Marianne's suggestion two things. So the first thing I would add is to make sure that you are asking the right questions in your forms. If it's like a contact sales form and you require to know, you know, if they're like their website URL, like maybe that's something that you require to know about their business, that would let you know if it's a legitimate business or not. So if they don't have a website URL, you wouldn't work with them. Let's go ahead and ask for it in the form. Things like that. I would get as close to what you need as possible in the form. And, you know, obviously the longer the form, the less likely someone is to fill out. So maybe you prioritize like contact sales forms have everything, and maybe ebook forms are progressive forms where if you found out some information, maybe it asks a new question next time, things like that. The other thing I would suggest is lead scoring. So you can actually build lead scores within HubSpot. I know other platforms too, that you can put in criteria for.
Absolutely.
If you downloaded this, I give you 5 points. But then if you take another action, I bump you to 10. Like, you could have specific lead scores, and then you can determine like, okay, this person is an 8. I'm not going to send them to sales yet until they hit 10. You can have some specific lead score.
We should do a podcast episode on lead scoring.
That'd be good. I would like that.
Okay. Great. Stay tuned, Brent, everybody.
Brent, add it to the list. Just kidding. Okay, next question. Hey, Marianne and Emily, big question here. Oh. We're considering switching CRMs, but we're worried about adoption issues. What are the best ways to ensure a smooth transition from our sales team?
That is such a fair worry. I think that adoption issues, if not addressed in advance, can cause problems. The short answer would be training, setting expectations from leadership, and ongoing training. It's not train and be done. That would be my short answer.
I agree. I think the key here is the setting expectations from leadership. I think that if there are no, I mean, Marianne and I have been in sales. Like, we all know sales people's brains. Like, it's just one more thing to do unless they see what's in it for them. So, you know, really making sure that leadership is positioning this as a tool for them, for their productivity, for their organization, for their forecast management, but then also holding them accountable, saying, if you don't put in your deals, you're not getting commission. If whoever has the contact in first is the one that gets the deal, like things like that, and having that in your sales playbook, even just to tie this back around, like rules of engagement, you know, having very specific expectations and following those expectations that you've set. And, you know, if the first time that someone doesn't put in a deal and doesn't get commission will be the last time that anyone does that, because no one wants that. And so having those clear cut rules and then following through, that gets adoption real quick.
Follow through. Isn't that unbelievable? It's such a simple thing. Like, just follow through as a sales leader.
Yeah. Just do what you say you're going to do and people listen. revolutionary. Yeah, I would say that, and you know, obviously shameless plug, work with an agency like Lead G2. Yeah. I mean, seriously, when it comes to onboarding and implementation and hand holding throughout and helping you meet your goals, we do that really well. We help train. We have several HubSpot certified trainers on our team. So if you're using HubSpot, thinking about using HubSpot and switching, use Lead G2.
Right. I love it. Okay. Well, thanks everybody for listening and tuning in. Please do share your B2B sales and marketing questions with us. So LinkedIn, you can leave us a voicemail in the show notes, or you can send us an email. Be sure to follow the podcast for more insights and visit Lead G2 website or blog for additional resources.
Thank you, everyone. Bye, Marianne.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks so much for tuning in to the B2B Sales and Marketing Hotline.
Don't forget to follow us wherever you listen to podcasts so that you never miss an episode. And if you've got a question for us, head to the show notes and let us know what's on your mind.
And visit our website, leadg2.com, where you can find even more helpful B2B sales and marketing resources.